sexy, spooky bones.
Hello, and welcome to The Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to the show. This week, we will review The Menu. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thoughts, and then we go into a deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go
and
back.
And I'm Johnny.
Go back to TV Corner. And we're going to review Yellow Jackets Episode 2, titled F Sharp.
And I'm John.
And I'm Johnny.
Yeah, what'd you think? Even though we did a brief little breakdown of the episode because we both saw it at the very beginning of the week.
Yeah, I couldn't wait to rewatch this because I love this show. But I did have to do a catch up. I was gonna look up like a YouTube season one catch up, but I didn't want to like if I introduced that into my YouTube. Algorithm,
it'll pop
all out. This Yellow Jacket spoiler stuff, and right now I'm like spoiler free. I don't know anything, and I know that there's like ads and like bits of articles written about season two coming up that I'm just like actively avoiding. So
Elijah Wood
is in it. Yeah, that's gonna be interesting. He plays I think he's like a boyfriend of somebody. He's probably part of that mystery group that she's part of, the true crime mystery group, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
That's my wild guess. But
Misty turns into Elijah Wood.
I really love this. I like that we do a little bit. So the show is structured like do a little bit in the about with the kids, and then we do a little bit of present day stuff, and we are literally the kid stuff is pretty straightforward. It's just a plane crash. And how they survive, which is brutal, intense, has a lot of like, you really kind of feel it because there's like, you want to see who survives and who, what happens to who didn't survive. Right off the bat, they start with the assistant coach, I think assistant coach, right? He loses his part of his leg. And then
fucking chops that shit off.
And we kind of see how, because the first episode ended with Misty kind of leading this group. And we kind of see why, because she kind of has a lot of training and surviving and stuff like that. So, of course, naturally, she becomes a easy leader. In contrast of Jackie, who is going to leave somebody to die.
That was so hardcore.
Yeah, that was one of the best moments in the show so far. Because I like how they set up Jackie they were setting her up as like, oh, she's the team leader, but out in surviving, she clearly is not going to be that person. So,
no,
not at all. And she almost killed one of the few members, Teen Van. Her name is Van. She's the goalkeeper.
Van. I know a person named Van. So I feel like right now in the show, it is finally starting to become more interesting for me personally when it comes to the adult versions of people.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because not like it was boring, but I was just more interested in like, I want to see what's going on with the kids. Not because of, I mean, yeah, because it's just like, what are they going to do? They just kind of plane crash.
Mm-hmm.
But also because they keep jumping to another moment in time where they have become ritualistic and like, I don't know, like they have ceremonies to slaughter people and eat them. So I want to know more about that, which we didn't get too much of that this episode. Right. But we did get a pretty hardcore, what we kind of suspected Misty was going to do anyway, I think. I mean, I personally thought, like, yeah, I feel like Misty might be the reason they stayed there longer than they should have.
Yeah, so Misty covets these guys' attention. She wants attention, and she covets their, like, friendship, right? So she decides to... And they're all saying really nice things about her. I think it was actually Van who said something nice about her. And she... They mentioned that the black box... Misty finds the black box and destroys it.
Yep. Also, because I don't know if it's like she's wanting these friendships. I think for me, what I can already sense is she relishes in control.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what we kind of saw when she's like treating her patient as an adult, as like Misty, like, I don't know why she needs to do any of these things. She's going to grow up to be Christina Ricci. That's fucking, you won. But, you know, how she's like controlling with that patient. Like, I can be nice to you, but you got to be nice to me because I demand it, basically.
Yeah, I think they're doing, they're showing a lot of sides of Misty. Because they're definitely portraying her, the Christina Ricci stuff, they're portraying her as, like, well, manipulative, right? And almost a central character, almost like a she's not really, like, antagonistic to the plot, per se, but she's, like, she's definitely motivated by her own agenda. And she manipulates not only a date to come back to her house, but she also manipulates Juliette Lewis to go along with her. Because I think she's also interested. It seems like all of the
That part lost me a little bit. I'll be honest. Like, that part of the show, I was like, "What is this?"
Yeah.
Like that whole date scene. I'm like, "Why? Why are we even watching this?"
Oh yeah.
You're telling me that dude is not going to go home with Christina Ricci. I don't understand this fucking show right now. And I was like pulling my hair, like, this makes no fucking sense. And then I had to remember Christina Ricci's playing a character.
Yeah, and I think it has less to do with her parents and more to do with, like, her personality. She maybe not be, like, a very... She seems like kind of a overbearing personality to be around. So, despite how attractive she could be, like, you know, like, why would I want to hang out with this person? So...
I don't know. A lot of people want to hang out with, like, Harry Styles.
Who? So. Harry Styles? Oh, that's because he's...
Not to be confused with me. I just have a style of hair. That's very hairy.
I think it's just the whole rock star thing. People are attracted to that, in his case.
Yeah, Christina Ricci was not only Wednesday Addams, but also fucking a ghost at one point in your career. That was played by, what's his name? Fucking, I'm talking about Casper.
Oh, Devin Sawa.
Yeah.
I mean, she definitely kind of took whole, like, she was kind of more in, like, involved to the plot of the story. Because, I mean, this show opens with Shauna's character, right? She's, like, kind of, like, was the center of it. And she's kind of now, it's becoming more of an ensemble. She's not really, like, the main character of the plot.
Oh, that is something I took away from the show. It kind of seems like very Lost, right?
Yeah.
And very From. It feels like each episode is just kind of giving you an idea of the lives of each of these characters. So I don't know. I feel like this one was more of the Misty one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the Juliette Lewis one, which I feel like is going to be the next episode.
I would suspect so, only because it seems like she... They're already on their way to go find the other survivor, the guy, one of the guys, one of the brothers.
Jake, right?
I don't remember his name. Yeah. Names are not yet important. I know all their faces and stuff. I know who's who in the younger versions of them. But yeah, I mean, actually, you know, the guys are probably like the least interesting thing on the show. They really haven't done anything with them.
Oh, yeah. Like, 1,000,000%. I keep forgetting who's who.
Yeah.
Like, I had such trouble with understanding who that boy was, who her husband was last week, right? I'm like, I just, the men in the show are not important for a very good reason. It's not about them.
Yeah, and in his case, I think that he just sort of, there's a throwaway shot of like them getting married, pregnant, taking pictures, and then there's like an older picture of them and stuff. So it's very kind of like quick. And then he had more of a bigger role in this episode than he did the previous one because he was kind of absent. And he's actually here, and he's and you kind of see Shauna's and Jeff's marriage and how it's not really a strong marriage. They don't really have like a good connection, I guess, right? Because the therapist tells them in a very sassy way, tells them to like they need to work on their sex life or something.
Yeah.
I thought that character's a little overdone, but yeah.
Which I like. There's another moment where they're kids and it's right after the plane crash and they're all trying to like just cope with what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the religious girl, which like it's, I'm not trying to shit on religious people, but they're obviously doing something with this character. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
You know, just how silly and extreme these things can sound. Where she's crying because she's like, this is my fault. It's my fault we crashed. Because last week I was upset with somebody and it was like some stupid situation. And I called her the C word in my head. Or I called her the C word, like, oh, you called her a C word and you think that's why? Like, yeah, in my head. And everybody starts laughing.
Yeah.
And then they start talking about like the stupid things they could have done. But then when it gets to Shauna, it almost sounds like she's about to confess. But then, bam, Misty had walked away. Because she was heating up the fucking axe with the fire to cauterize the coach's leg.
Yeah.
Like, jeez, dude.
No, yeah, that was a... I like that there...
What else?
Huh?
No, it's just... The survivor that they're going to go and meet, Juliette Lewis and Christina Ricci, is one of the kids of the main coach, question mark? The one that was stuck in the tree?
Yeah, he's
and
either...
one of the kids is trying to help him, and he falls to his death by getting impelled.
So I think the there was a quick scene that it's the one Julia Lewis like offers a drink to, because you know she has alcohol with her or whatever. She has like a flask, right? And then it's the that's the older version they're looking for.
But she also runs into her goth dweeby friend.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm.
That was such a throwaway thing, but I feel like it's going to be important.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. He was a sheriff or cop or I don't know. He was something, right?
I don't know. He just looked way younger than everybody else. So it was kind of confusing to me.
Mm.
It took me a minute to understand who he was. Yeah, I don't know. This show is pretty fucking good. I'm in love with Christina Ricci, but I'm in love with like her Misty character. I mean, I really love both of like the younger version. She's doing a fucking great job. And Christina Ricci's like obviously manipulative. Like the very end of the episode, Juliette Lewis is going to go and meet that guy and her Porsche doesn't start. And Christina Ricci drives up and parks right next to her at the fucking like motel that she's staying at that looks mm-hmm. like Schitt's Creek.
Yeah.
And she's like, hey, is everything okay? And she's like, what are you doing here? I was like, oh, I just stopped to go get a coffee and I drove by to see if you were fine. And she basically is like, yeah, car trouble, weird, huh? Like, obviously, Juliette Lewis, it kind of seems like she's aware that she probably did this.
She's
like, all right, might as well play along.
Play along, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's also one connection I made was like these were two iconic, you know, actresses in the 90s, Juliette Lewis and Christina Ricci. And now they're here.
And so is Elijah Wood's going to come in. He's also an iconic actress from the 90s.
Yep. So I think that's super fun. I think that's interesting. I think like Juliette Lewis, I think, is so interesting to watch. Like, I think she's like on another level right now. She did this really minor part in this other HBO show,
Natural Born Killers.
Yeah, she was getting that. Yeah, yeah. I think it's kind of stupid, but in retrospect, I think it is kind of dumb. But she did like this minor part in this one episode, and she was in it for like just one episode, but she was like the best thing in that show. I was like, oh, and then she like doesn't show up again. And I was like, damn, really good actress.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
She was also one of the Audreys in the Vacation movies, and my favorite Vacation movie, Christmas Vacation.
Yeah, the best, the only Vacation movie. Yeah, to be honest.
What? National Lampoon's Vegas Vacation is not your favorite?
No, yeah. Unfortunately not.
Well, I think we can agree we're fucking up. We want to just watch the rest of the season, but we are being good young boys and making sure we only watch one episode a week.
Yeah, I got a plan to watch it maybe later in the week, but I probably won't. I'll probably, after this show, I'll probably be like, let's watch another episode of Yellow Jackets. I can just catch up. It is super good, yeah.
It always leaves off in such a fucking killer note. Like last week was the reveal of Misty being the leader of the Lord of the Flies. And
ish thing, yeah.
This episode also ends with a Misty line because Juliette Lewis gets in her car and says, I'm driving. Mm-hmm. And she looks at her coffee in her hand and she looks at the coffee on the dashboard and she's like, why'd you get two coffees? She's like, I always get two of everything. Just in case, you know, I run into a friend and now you can share something with your friend. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's amazing. I love it. It's scary.
Yeah. No, it was excellent. So, yeah, totally involved. Really liked it. Very, very good. Cool.
Very good. As it rains in LA for the 90th day in a row.
Yeah, day 90 of LA underwater.
Day 90 of living in Atlantis. There's a video, sorry to sidetrack, but there's a video, I think it was on Food's Gone Wild, but where the caption on the video was, this is why I love Filipino people. Is that what it said? And it was like, this guy is outside recording some dude who's in shorts and like just like a Filipino dude, right? He's just recording him and focusing on him. And then the dude like comes around and goes to his window and he goes like, yo, bro, what are you doing? It's raining. And the guy's like, what do you mean it's raining? This isn't rain. This is a drop in a bucket. This isn't fucking rain. Go to the Philippines. You'll see your house float away from you. Here is just fucking a little bit of rain and walks away upset. And I'm like, ah.
Of course, yeah.
I wish I could be like that. I'm just like, I'm not leaving today.
Yeah, no.
Unless I have to, I'm not leaving my apartment.
Same, yeah. The whole rain thing has been... This is, I mean, not to sidetrack, but like, this is why the end of the apocalyptic thing would never happen, because like this city almost got taken down with by rain. So yeah. The city was like in submerged underwater, floated off into the Pacific a few days ago. So there's no way post-apocalyptic shit's gonna work. We're gonna be survivors and backpacks and walking around and shit. Like, none of that's gonna happen, dude. We're done. It's over.
We are super done.
Yeah.
Also, we're not rain people. We come from another very dry climate.
Oh, that's true too. Yeah.
So it's just I never bought raincoat gear. And then for most of my young adult life, I was just like, I don't give a fuck. I'm just going to wear whatever. And now I'm like, why don't I have these things anymore? Because they don't fit. But like, oh, I don't have a raincoat that fits. Fuck.
Yeah.
And I keep wearing my wool, sorry, I'm a bad vegan, but my wool long coat, it doesn't kill them, okay? They need it or else they will suffocate.
Murderer. I'm just kidding.
I was visiting a place that would hit like 2 degrees or whatever, so I was like, fuck that. I'm buying whatever I need. Yeah.
They smell better on the outside. No? Star Wars?
Kind of like me, yeah.
That's
right.
cut up that tauntaun to sleep, put Luke in it so you can sleep in it. And then Han Solo has like an exacerbated they smell better on the outside or something like that. I don't know. Family Guy did like a sketch about it. It's pretty funny. Yeah. Anywho, what are we doing? I don't remember what we're doing anywhere. Okay.
We are going to review The Manure.
The Manure. Spoiler. John hated it. All right. All right. Let's go move over to our main review of The Menu. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary. drum roll, please.
Yes. For 2022's The Menu, also pronounced The Menu, coming in at number 3, Lord Voldemort reveals final Horcrux.
Yeah, that was one thing I was going to say. Yeah.
It's burgers. All right. coming in at number 2.
Isn't that, not to sidetrack, not to interrupt you, but isn't it kind of like fucking that whole thing? We'll get into it. We can talk about it later. But like that whole thing was like, felt like, what if Bob Burgers went evil or something? Like,
I was going to do something like that, but I couldn't find like a good 5-word.
Bob. Yeah. Anyways, continue. Yeah.
Bob Belcher's The Menu. I couldn't like think of like.
Yeah.
Coming in at number 2, Sweet Campfire brings people together.
Okay. Yep.
And coming in at number 1, for The Menu, proof rich people get fire meals.
Hell yeah. Spicy. They still got tacos. Taco Tuesday.
Yeah, they got tacos. They got laser printed tortillas. Or what is like his number one? It's like main assistant person. I don't know. I'm not well versed in like the kitchen aspect of jobs.
Chef.
Wait, I mean, they're all a bunch of sous chefs, right?
Oh,
they all sous chefs.
Sure. I don't know.
But she was like, "Oh, that is called a tortilla." I'm like, oh, "Calm down." But I like it because all of these people are supposed to be obnoxious, and it's really funny.
Cool. So yeah, John, give me your first thoughts on The Menu.
It is quite funny. I had a friend tell me like, you need to watch the movie because you like ridiculous movies. I'm like, what is, okay, let me check.
First of all, what does that mean? So,
yeah. And for like the first like what, like 35 minutes of the movie, I'm like, yeah, I mean, it's silly, but I'm like, I'm not going to consider this ridiculous. Like, holy shit, was I in store for something? It was like, once you thought a moment couldn't be topped with something more ridiculous, something else ridiculous happens. I'm like, what the fuck? This movie is kind of awesome. I kind of liked it a lot.
Walked
away thinking like, oh shit, I actually really enjoyed that movie. That was really good.
Are you a foodie in any type? Do you partake in this gastro food?
Not to that like extreme. That? I have had meals like that before where I'm like, this is an interesting experience, but this is like, I'm glad I didn't pay for this.
Yeah. So this is, I personally would never venture or seek out this sort of thing. I like, I don't know, like kind of like, cultural food, like I like homemade type of food that people sell, you know, like that to me is much more interesting. I like going to different, especially living in LA, we got such a fucking vast variety of food here. So
holy shit, yeah.
So it's never ending, right, with people. So this sort of thing, I mean, I don't think I could ever, I'm sure it's good, right, and it's an experience, but I don't think I would ever like throw down the, I'm assuming an exorbitant amount of money to have an experience like that personally. So, but I did really like this. I really liked it. I think like, I'll get off my, like, I'll start with my criticisms. I think like the ending doesn't quite like land for me, but I actively loved everything leading up to it. And in spoilers, I can kind of tell you where I feel like the film kind of like didn't quite like knock it out of the park, because though I think it's like, it's not like a home run, but it's like super close. Like it's, I don't know, I don't play golf, so it wasn't like a home run. So, but it was super close. But I loved actually, everything else.
Yeah. When I sat with it, I decidedly went with, I thought the ending was fantastic, because I was kind of right there with you where it was like, okay, it's a bold choice to just kind of end it right here, but it doesn't really fulfill anything. But then the more I thought about it, the more I'm like, I'm just not really paying attention to who these characters really are.
Yeah. And I think, though I loved like everything about this, I love the skewering of like rich people in this movie. I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved how they just like, I wasn't quite sure what this was. I thought because I only had a brief sense of what the movie was about. I thought, well, maybe he's feeding rich people to rich people. I don't know. I thought it was kind of cannibalism.
Yeah, yeah.
That was my
thought, something like that too.
That was like my first thought. But as I went through it, it's complete like, basically making fun of the rich. You know, tearing down the rich and all of their empty lives. You know, because they think that with money, with so much money and privilege and power, they're able to like buy whatever they want and that buys you happiness. But like with the point, I think what the menu is and what I think what the, you know, Ralph Fiennes character is getting to is like how empty all of it was, right? How they sucked all the life out of the work, the artistic work. Because I think that that's one thing that I don't know if you got this sense of it, but like he's supposed to be like as an artist, right? Like he's supposed to be like the artist who has no more appreciation of his work. It was one interpretation that I kind of took from it.
I took that, but I also took that this is somebody who has bought into the bullshit and is so succumbed by it that he's become this person who becomes one of those people like, I am an artist and you took from me and blah, 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 blah. And then that's the type of person they become. They also become a bad person, thinking they're doing something extravagant, but it's really something very fucking stupid. And like this is going to be our final thing. But the thing is like, I guess that's kind of a spoiler. I'll put a pin in that.
Okay. I'll say
why I think he is so pretentious and self-indulgent is very evident by what happens at the very, very end.
No, I completely agree. No, I agree. I think that like he becomes those things, but I think that there's an interesting metaphor here for any type of artist, right? Because you have, and they're all represented in the customers that are there. You have
and the sous chefs,
and
because they want his life so badly, but they're still just people like, what's a good way to put this? Kind of like BG, well, not BG actors. I'm just going to relate it to like the film industry, but like people that want that success and other people just already kind of have it because of how lucky they were, like where they come from or, you know, what kind of control they have over people. And these other people that are convinced, like, if I just do this for like this one person, I will be this. It's like, no, that's not how any of this works.
I feel, yeah. And I get that. Like, I think that there's, because there was the men, those like really three annoying guys who were the money guys, right? And they felt like they owned him, right? Because they paid for his restaurant. So like they you know, and the other part was like there was critics who like tore down his work in the past, right? Like which was some of the restaurants were later sketched. And then you had Nicholas Holt.
Tier, right? Yeah.
His character who represents fanboys, right? Who are on the internet pretending they know everything about filmmaking and like, oh, I would have never done that. But then, without spoiling, when he's actually put in that situation, he fucking makes the worst, you know, what was it? The bullshit course.
Yeah.
You know, it was Tyler's bullshit, right? So there's a little bit of like, and like each, like a little bit of like an analogy for like how an artist would work and how like he's trapped and how he becomes like not a victim, because I think he indulges himself in his, not only his behavior and his own, you know, his own hype about what it is that he's doing. Like it's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of like
that Nicholas Holt part was really funny. It's like, okay, well, what do you need? And he's like so nervous and he's like, oh, I don't know, fennel. I'm like, why is the first thing you're gonna put in a pan fennel? You fucking kidding me?
Leeks.
Onion. Yeah.
shit. Do you want shit? Get you shit. No, it was excellent. Yeah. But I think a through line through this is like, I thought it was spot on, perfect, like absurd. It's an absurdist movie, right? Like the.
Yeah, but leave Arturo Castro alone. Leave him alone. Just.
Who's that Arturo Castro?
He's a national treasure. No, Arturo Castro is a.
Oh yeah, I need to talk about the money guy.
The guy from Broad City. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. He's actually like a
friend from Broad City.
For yeah. So I thought like all of the acting and it was excellent. I like that it was all kind of set in this like one restaurant, you know. I know I don't remember. Are you're not the biggest Anna Taylor-Joy fan, right? You haven't.
No, but she was great.
Yeah, I thought she was excellent in this. I thought Nicholas Hoult was like, dude, Nicholas Hoult is like, he's like this secret recipe to everything, right? Like a little like secret sauce you throw in because everything he's in is like interesting. He's like,
are you saying he should have played Elvis over Austin Butler?
Yes,
interesting. I kind of like that idea. Yeah.
Didn't know Nicholas Hoult was British.
Yeah, British.
He's British. Yeah, didn't know that. I guess that tracks. No. Hold on, let me look at his bio. I'm getting completely sidetracked. Let me see.
It's okay.
He was the Bowder Boy. Yeah, he wasn't a Bowder Boy. Yeah. And of course, famously, he was in Mad Max. So.
You mean Warm Bodies?
Yeah. Warm Bodies. Yeah, no, he was good in that too.
But he was also like, you never saw the show Skins?
No.
I feel like that was his like first like big. I mean, About a Boy was big, but like
that was his first movie, right?
First like mainstream thing, yeah.
Oh, okay.
And not that About a Boy wasn't his first mainstream, but you know what I mean. Like he was a child then. It's not like, you know.
Yeah.
No, but he's brilliant. I like him. And yeah, he was great in this.
Mm-hmm.
And his accent was fucking spectacular.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Anya Taylor-Joy though, could not buy that she was from fucking Michigan or Virginia, wherever she was from. I'm like, you do not sound Midwest.
No. Yeah, no.
Should have just said you're from like a big city. That way I could be like, yeah, okay.
Dallas, Texas. I'm just kidding.
Dallas? H-Town? Tipping on four fours.
Corpus Christi. Albuquerque.
Not to be sidetracked again, but this does involve food. One of my favorite YouTubers, D-Pizzy 2099, I think is what it's called, is this dude who just recreates all the prison meals he made because like he got locked up for a long time, like when he was young and got out. Now he's not old or anything, but like, so that's all like his YouTube videos are, which are fucking interesting to look at. Also, his cholesterol must be through the fucking roof. But just found out he's from H-Town and now he lives in Long Beach.
Hell yeah.
Fun little tidbits about other aspects of food and life.
Yeah, friend of the show.
From the menu.
Yep.
To prison food.
Prison food. Yeah, I think it's super interesting the way they like they are just like on fire in terms of like making fun of like not only the food, the like you're eating the island, right? Like they painstakingly walk you through.
Yeah.
This like, you know, because this movie's set on an island and they boat them over, ferry them over to the island and. They walk around and talk about how everything is like caught fresh from the island so they can eat, right? Or not eat, right? Because they specifically say, don't eat my food or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
It's also, like, they're paying, like, I don't know, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, I'm assuming.
1,100? 12?
Oh, 1,100. Okay.
Yeah, 12 something. I think there was some number out there that was like, oh my God, I would never. Even if it's like, you know, 6-course meal, fuck that. I don't think I've ever had a 6-course meal. So.
Yeah, they're all kind of like that. We're coming from the same place, so we're not used to, like, I'd rather just have like the one big meal in front of me, right? I want to like. Eat what I want to eat.
Yeah.
I need like the course meal stuff is like interesting because it forces you to not ever get full.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And you're like being forced to pace while you eat, which is interesting. I mean, it's you always leave satisfied and never like overly full or whatever. Like those types of meals they're good. They're an experience, I think, but I wouldn't pay that much for it.
Yeah. I mean, I wear a clean shirt when I go to the buffet. So,
fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah.
I got my own bib. I'm a sophisticate.
No, thank you. I have my own bibs and napkins. No, yeah, I don't know.
I saw this one at a Big Lots, and it just actually like the baby one that catches all the excess food. Right, you know which one I'm talking about? The rubber pouch that they put on baby bibs now.
So when I had a giant ass beard, I used to get ranch stuck like stuck in my beard all the time. That was like a thing. I was like,
which is like bizarre because I know for a fact you do not touch ranch. You hate ranch. So the fact that you always had ranch in your beard.
True.
Rolando plows.
Yeah. I drink ranch from the bottle. Yeah. Yeah. Hate the stuff now. Drank it from the bottle. Just squeezed it in my mouth.
Should we also mention like all the other notable actors? Like John Leguizamo was great.
Oh yeah. How funny was it that he was everyone's brought there for a purpose, and he was brought there because the chef, Ray Fiennes' character, didn't like the movie he was in. He thought it was like, he's like, I had one day off. I work 6 days a week. I had one day off, and I wasted my time on your movie, which is like,
oh my God, yeah.
That's so funny.
And then, I mean, I feel like we're giving something away. Should we just kind of reveal what the twist is? Because it happens midway through the movie. They're all being brought there to diet.
Not to eat bread. They're all brought there for very specific reasons. So they have like a small table. I guess because they pay so much, they have like small table guests. It was like 12 guests total, they said, around there. And
but am I saying, is it a spoiler to reveal why they're brought there? Like the very simple version of why
maybe
they're brought there.
Maybe because
I wanted to reveal like the reason John Leguizamo's date has to also be a part of this situation, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah, yeah, because she asked, right?
Yeah. Maybe we can wait on that. I just that fucking made me laugh really hard.
Yeah, I really thought that was a good everyone's brought there for a reason, and even the assistant that was with John Leguizamo, and they do, you know, a great job with I also thought it was interesting with the older couple too. You know, that the people that had been there and they couldn't even remember like what they had eaten there once. Yeah. Like that's.
Oh. Yeah. She was like, it's cod. Just say cod. He was like, it wasn't cod, you fucking idiot.
What do you call it? He called her something, right? You something. I don't remember. It's like a Chef Gordon Ramsay insult.
Yeah. A panini head.
Panini head.
I mean, there's like a bunch of questions, but I guess we should, I'll ask them when we get into spoilers.
Okay.
I didn't know who that lady was in the corner that he just could never seem to satisfy, the drunk old lady.
Oh, that was his mom. I think that really was his mom. The only thing, with that, I kind of feel like I didn't understand why she was there. I kind of felt like that was leading somewhere, but it never went anywhere. Like, it just sort of, he like forces his mom to sit there with him when he has these guests over. And so she can drink and be there. I don't know. It was kind of like,
yeah, no.
It was kind of like a weird thing.
Proud of him, but she never was. I don't know.
Yeah, it was like a weird thing as to, it never went anywhere. You would think like that was going to go somewhere, but it didn't, that particular storyline.
Yeah. Should we just already switch into spoilers? Because I feel like half of the movie takes place after the reveal of what's going to happen.
Yeah, sure. Let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into spoilers.
So they're all there to die.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to die. That is the end result of the menu that he has made. And the thing that I was going to mention that I thought was funny was when they asked John Leguizamo's assistant asked him, do I have to die too? And he's like, did you go to college? And she's like, yes, I went to Brown. It's like, okay. Do you have any student loan debts? And she's like, no. Or did you take out any student loans? She's like, no. And like, you have to die.
So part of this, this menu, the reason why they have to die is because they're supposed to represent like the worst part of like this privileged society, right? And he's trying to punish them, and he's going to give them, which is sort of revealed because he does like three, it's like a 6-course thing. By like halfway through the third course, he kind of does that one chef kills himself, right? He shoots himself. Something's mess. Yeah, I don't remember the name.
Was that like the sous chefs covered up the thing with like Visqueen or something, but only person that got blood on them was his mom, I think, right?
His mom, and yeah, he did wipe his mom and maybe a few other, maybe not a few other people, but yeah, they did lay some stuff out for his suicide. So
what a weird, like they were so obsessive with like the chef, like they were just like, yes, I mean, which is the way it kind of is, but not to that degree.
Mm-hmm. So I think one of the reasons why I feel like the ending didn't land for me was because they make a big deal. I don't know if they make a big deal, but they mention the fact that his menu always has like a meaning to it. And I thought that was like, I don't know, maybe you can, did you think that was like a thing that was going to play out at the end? Because I thought it was. Like the meaning of the menu, like because it's kind of one thing the Nicholas Holt character says is that like you kind of eat, you know, the courses, and then he kind of like puts into focus what the theme of the menu was. So I kind of thought like, well, what's the overarching theme of the of this, and was it going to be like this like grand finale
retribution, I guess, was the idea, because each of the courses definitely had a take sort of feel to them. Like even the one about like you're eating the actual island, because it was like different things that weren't actually edible, but like, cause you're just taking, cause these people are takers.
Right.
And now it's time that they all
get took.
Ended, I guess. Yeah. Took. You've taken enough. Now it's time for that to stop and end or whatever. And
he's punishing them, essentially, this class of people.
And himself and the people, like his whatever, right? Like, we all deserve this, is mm-hmm. what he thinks.
Yeah.
Except for one character, right? But
I kind of feel like
that's why I like the very end, because I think that's what makes it poetic. Because if you're confused, like you don't understand that, it doesn't really matter, because I'm just going to skip to what happens at the end. Anya Taylor-Joy breaks into his house, which looks exactly like the restaurant that they're in right now, and sees casually out of the corner after she like finds like a CB radio and tries to contact somebody. Guy pretends to be a Coast Guard or whatever the fuck.
That was a bit of a plot contrivance, right?
Yeah.
Don't you think? Like, that was kind of like a movie thing, because what if she didn't radio anybody? And what does that guy do? He just sits in his outfit and he just sits there in case they CB radio him, and he gets to be a police officer, Coast Guard. That was kind of like contrived, but
I think, I mean, yes, but I think also like, I'm pretty sure that they have something in the back of the restaurant that picks up that frequency, and that's where he answered it and then ran, and like, nobody's going to notice, because I have a feeling if we watch the movie again, he's going to be there cooking the entire time. But much like the patrons, we're not really giving a shit who's there.
Yeah. And I think that like they did a really good job of showing that we never really got a sense of like how many people there were. Right. Because they do show that there were a lot of like large, muscly men everywhere kind of standing around. Kind of imposingly,
I saw like half women.
I saw Half Men. I don't know.
Maybe it's just, but... there was a one of the main focal person people I saw there for sure was a black woman, like a.
Mm-hmm. Well, no, not in the kitchen, but woman, yeah. But like around, oh, around.
That's
yeah.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
And they even during that chase when they let the guys try to like run for 45 seconds, that they all got chased down by, I believe, men. Right. So you get a sense that they're all like henchmenish vibes. And I love that they bring up a great point that what if we just once they find out they're all going to die, they're like, or they're basically trapped there. They all get together. It's like, what if we all just like get our knives and go at, try to take them down. But it's like, with their knife skills, like, it's like, who, like, cause they're chefs.
And then fucking Ray Fiennes later was like, you know, at any point you probably could have overtaken us pretty easily, but you didn't. So
it's true. Yeah.
Like, he says that, like, he's like, you could have just done it and you didn't. So I don't know. Which is kind of weird, which is where like it really plays into like the fantastical nature of it, because at the end it kind of feels like they all gave in to the idea also.
Mm-hmm.
They all gave in to being a part of this menu.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, this is what it is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's probably one thing that doesn't, because I feel like it's building to this like crescendo-y ending. Big thing, big meaning, bigger topical meanings. But once it gets revealed what this menu actually is, it never really, like, in my opinion, goes any higher than that. Even though we see more courses and meals, like, it never really, like, for me, it never, like elevated it.
I agree with that. But what I feel like really wraps that up for me is Anya Taylor-Joy stops the boat that she gets away on, turns around, and this is after, like, she finds out that Ray Fiennes used to be Bob Belcher.
yeah.
Like, he got his first big start working at a, like, a fast food burger.
His first love was making burgers, right? Like, something simple, casual, you know, everyday thing. That was like his first, that's what got him noticed. And he loved making hamburgers. Yeah. We see.
Which is also like, it's such an interesting thing. The takeaway is Anya Taylor-Joy is a high-end sex worker.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And she kind of sees into all this bullshit from, like, just she deals with rich people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So she kind of knows how to talk to people. That's why if you watch it again and don't take it like she's believing in these things, she's more of like calling people out on, like, calling him out on his bullshit the entire time, because she knows how to, like, oh, I know people like you. It's not a fucking revelation you think it is.
Mm-hmm.
So she like tells him, like, oh, you know what, I have before dessert, like, or the final course, whatever, I'm still hungry. And chef's like, well, what do you want? And she's like, I want a cheeseburger. And then they have that whole back and forth, and then he makes like a double meat cheeseburger, by the way, like, geez. And she's like, how much will that set me back? And he's like, $9.99. she's like, does that come with fries? She's like, crinkled or julienne? I'm like, shut the fuck up. So he makes the burger. Everybody's just kind of watching, almost in awe, right? And then she goes, she grabs the burger, she takes a bite, and she basically is like saying, like, oh, it's so good. She's like, this is exquisite. But I fear my eyes were bigger than my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Can I have this to go? And it's just funny how Ray Fiennes is like, it's understandable.
Yeah.
Puts it in a to-go thing, gives a good thing, and she like just gets to leave, and everybody just accepts that, like, good for you, get out of here, you don't deserve to be a part of the bullshit we're a part of. And it's funny that they all do that, because when she's on the boat and she stops it to watch the place blow up, because, bigger spoiler alert, chef decides to burn everybody up, the final course is s'mores.
Mm-hmm.
And he dresses them up like big s'mores and sets them on fire, which I thought was fucking funny.
Yeah.
She just sits there, and then she eats her burger like, yeah, that was all bullshit. This is so fucking stupid. I almost died because of these people's bullshit. So I think that's the bigger thing of the movie, is like, everybody's so into their own ideas, especially when they get to that point of being like a successful artist. They're so in, like, so self-indulgent, so into themselves. Even when they think they're doing something for other people, they never are.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that's a good take. I think, I don't know, another part of the thing I was kind of like, I don't know, if it didn't quite land at the ending for me was the fact that how she got away, which you just like described. And I don't know if I quite believe that she appealed to his, you know, younger self, and he kind of gave into playing like, kind of like melted his heart, kind of like the end of Ratatouille. Spoilers for Ratatouille. When the chef, he makes the Ratatouille that brings the you know, cynical, mean critic back to his childhood or whatever, you know. And
I don't know if it was more of like,
that's what I could compare it to.
Part of him.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it kind of is kind of what happened, sort of. But I think it's more of like, she's like, I never wanted any of this shit. That's why I never ate it. And it was always upsetting him because it was fucking up his like menu, his vision.
Because she wouldn't play along because she saw through his bullshit. Yeah.
And then basically, I think that was more of like, I want a fucking American cheeseburger. Is basically him going like, all right, get the fuck out of here. Like, not like, oh my God, you've appealed to my inner child or whatever. Just more of like, oh my God, fuck it. Fuck you. Get out of here. You were never supposed to be here.
It's like, true. Yeah.
You're going to call me out on like the one thing people don't really know about me anymore. Like, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Fine.
Okay. Yeah.
My biggest question for this entire fucking movie that I just need an answer for, cause it's bugging me, is there a Nicholas Holt just running around the island, or what's going on?
What do you mean? Like, running around the island?
He gets kicked out, right?
No, he hangs himself.
Oh.
They make fun of him. Because Nicholas Holt plays this character, Tyler, who's like a super fan of the chef and the work, and knows like everything, what everything is. And knows, like, he's an expert on him and what his food and everything. But push come to shove, like, when he's actually, like, put into the kitchen, he can't cook fucking shit. He can't cook anything, which is what they call him out on, you know, like, his own pretentiousness. And it's soon after...
Another jab at critics?
It's another jab at fanboys. It's another jab at, like internet fanboys. Like, there's, like, this... The way one of the things that popped into my mind when that happened was there's these people who, I don't know if it's like a constant, maybe it's just my Twitter feed, but there's always these constant people who like, oh, look at this shot in Spider-Man. It's like they're facing the wrong direction and the lighting is so poor. They didn't have enough key light and blah, 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 blah. I'm like, dude, you don't know anything about filmmaking. If you were given,
you don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Like, if you were actually put on set and to deliver the thing that they're asking you to deliver under the pressures and the demands of whatever that day was, you would fucking feel too. You would probably feel more on your face than they did. You know, like that's what I think he represents.
Especially like, amateur filmmakers that like there was, and I'm kind of sidetracking, there was a big disservice done to indie filmmakers, I feel like, back in the 2000s, where we got a bunch of like really great films all being like, oh, this is like an up-and-coming filmmaker, you know, everything on their own, blah blah blah, only to find out like a decade later, nepotism, and they had all this fucking money. Yeah. So like all these people that are like, no, they did it the same way. I'm like, no, they definitely did not. They grew up with it. the people that they got to help them, like, oh, their friends or whatever, were people that have been doing this for like 20 years. It's not like they got some fucking film student to come in and do it.
I know that.
So yeah,
there's like this, there's just like this myth, right? That like, oh, fucking Robert Rodriguez fucking shot everything and, you know, rented cameras, whatever, and like Quentin was a video store clerk, and somehow it equates to them like, oh, maybe I can do these things, you know. And yeah, there are exceptions to the rule, but more likely than not, there are, and you find that out as you work in this business and as you kind of like, as you know, you are, and I did, that you find out that it's a lot about who you know and who's your dad and who's your mom and who's your family, you know, like what school did you go to, right? Like whether you come from money or privilege, those doors are always open.
Some of these people are right. Like some of these people that don't know what the fuck they're doing, but are so hell bent, usually people in their early 20s, right? Just like assuming like, no, I know enough to fucking make it big or do it. There are people like that working on these huge movies because, you know, their parents or their uncles and aunts or their producer, like the producer is their brother or whatever the fuck. Yeah. They get to work on these movies and it's not saying, hey, they made it 100% of the time. Cause I've worked with these people. It's always like, this guy doesn't know what the fuck he's doing. And look, he's here. Why? Because his fucking uncle is like the line producer or like whatever. Right. Like, this person is useless, but they keep going around trying to bark orders. And now we got to like, and these people are blissfully unaware. Now we got to like go and tell them like, hey, we really need this to happen. So we're just going to send you to go do that. And it's just busy work to get rid of them for like the week. And they have no idea.
I wish I remembered, but there was this one guy who said that like his dad was an electrician for movies. And so pretty much like I think he's like a musician now. He's like a singer in a band, but he said that like his dad was a musician that was going to be the job that he was going to be brought into. And he did. He says that he made like adult money, even though he was a child. And you know, he was like 20 years old, but he made like real money because he had his dad made sure he got taken care of, got into a union, worked, you know, TV shows, game shows, stuff like that, big stuff, or stuff to where he can make like adult money. And like, he was just a kid and like, he pissed off a lot of people and he burned a lot of bridges according to him because of his shitty attitude. Cause he wasn't ready for all of that, right? You know, so I mean,
which again, there's such a big connection between people that work in the industry and musicians.
Yeah,
it's like true. Yeah. Oh my god, like almost everybody. It's really like what the guitarist for Tool. I forgot his name, but he's a VFX guy. And he was like a huge VFX guy before that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became, you know, he's famous guitarist now.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's something that happens quite often, that people want to believe that like rag to riches story and think that like, oh, I did it on my own. And I'm just, people respect me because of the work I'm doing. It's like, no, dude, you're only getting your foot in the door because of who you know. That's why you're at the position you're in.
And oh man, I don't mean to sound like jaded or salty, but like now I run into people, younger people, which I'm not bragging about myself, but I look a lot younger than I am. So these people feel comfortable talking to me about like, yeah, you know, like I just wanted to join this union. Yeah. So I can get like the health insurance, but like, I don't really give a fuck to work on like these big things, you know, like my heart's like in the indie world, you know, with the indie features where we get to do this and that. And it's like, man, I don't understand that logic anymore. It makes no sense to me. You're like tearing yourself apart for like $100 a day.
Yeah. It's about the work.
Like, because these movies, like there's a potential they could like become something super special. I'm like, probably not, but okay.
Yeah.
It's like every indie movie that you love secretly had a big studio backing it in the end. So like,
it's true. More often than not, that's true. I mean,
only rag to riches story I'm willing to hear are Sam Raimi and the Coen brothers. So
sure. Sure. Yeah. Alrighty. Do you have any, we're going, according to my estimations, almost an hour. Do you want to, do you have any last thoughts about the menu? Yeah,
just it's worth a watch. I think it's great. I thought it was fun. It's a lot funnier than you'd expect it to be.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right.
Also, a missed opportunity to stab Ralph Fiennes in the dick with that one scene where, like, it was that woman sous chef's like trying to introduce her meal, A Man's Folly, right?
Man's Folly, yeah.
And that's the one where all the men were forced to run away and they were being chased. But like her thing where like chef tried to sleep with me and I rejected his advances and then he refused to look at me for like 6 months or something like that. And then I thought 100% that she had stabbed him in the dick. And I was like, yeah, this movie's fucking great. But no, it's just his leg.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was a dick. I turned her away. Yeah, missed opportunity. I thought
that's what dude. It was like his leg. It was his thigh.
Yeah.
Because he pulls a knife out later.
That's right. All right. Let's go to ratings. John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones. Ooh, sexy bones. Well, I know what you do. Show us your sexy spooky bones. No, wait, don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm going to give The Menu 4 Michelin stars. Oh yeah, shout out to French chef Dominique Crenn, who created all these dishes. She's the only female chef in the United States to obtain 3 Michelin stars.
Beautiful looking food.
Restaurant.
Yeah, all the food looked delicious.
San Francisco.
Yep. Hmm?
Check her out in San Francisco. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if she's still
good old small hometown San Francisco.
Yeah. Locals call it the Bay Area because nobody knows what it is.
Yeah, the Bay Area.
I'm going to give the menu 7.5 sexy spooky bones.
I'm going to do the same. I'm going to give it 7 spooky, sexy spooky bones. Really funny movie. And it didn't quite land on me. That's probably the only thing. Is like I didn't quite like by this ending. But I think that this movie definitely hits some highs. And I did like the absurdity of the piece of the movie.
Yeah, because Chef's realization of his menu was never going to be realized because Anya Taylor-Joy straight up murdered some woman. I mean, rightfully so, because she was trying to kill her.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, she wasn't there. Nobody questioned it, by
the way. Yeah, like, why she went missing and nobody asked. Yeah.
She was super important.
She was gone. And, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
All right, guys, gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening. And as always,
stay spooky.